This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. We have three sponsors for the show. The first is Jamtext, an app for the iPhone that allows you to send clips from songs attached to text messages. We're also sponsored by Jam Software, who make the Casper suite for iOS and Mac administration. And finally, Squarespace. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Now, for a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code PUPIL. Bradley, how are you?
Fantastic. It's 80 degrees here. Beautiful day. Of course, I'm stuck inside an office with no windows.
Okay, well, it's not a beautiful day here, and it's not 80 degrees either, I can tell you that.
Is it ever sunny where you're at?
Well, you know, there used to be this joke, I think it was Billy Connolly, a Scottish comedian, who used to tell it, which was that Scotland has two seasons, winter, and that weekend in May when it's really nice. So it's not that weekend in May yet, so it's still winter here.
I had a funny thing happen yesterday. I had a buddy that got broken into, but he had like four drop cams, which I don't know if you guys ever use those. We'll link to them in the show notes. They've talked about those, I believe, on the Mac Power Users podcast before. So yes, he put together this entire montage for YouTube of the break-in happening. And then like some of the news stories picked it up as well from, you know, via social media. And so now he's been interviewed on the news just from this. And it's pretty funny that he was able to literally catch the guy. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
That's what you call poor target selection.
Yeah, definitely. You know, of course, we're in the midst of the 8-week shuffle towards the end of the school year, and I'm actually trying to rebuild our website for the next school year. I've basically got it built in Squarespace. You know, they call that eating your own dog food. You know, they're a fine sponsor of the show. I've got it built, and I'm just trying to convince my headmaster that's the way to go. Long term, because obviously it's a ton cheaper for me to build it in Squarespace than it is to hire it out to a company. We met with one company; they use their different CMSs. One company uses WordPress, another one uses Expression Engine, and they all do fine work. But you know, the one I've built in Squarespace to me is beautiful, and you know, it's going to cost us literally like we would be on the $200 a year plan. I'm really hoping we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, for my sins, I'm having the job of having to make a Facebook page for our school, which we've kind of resisted forever, but I guess the time has come that we may end up making our debut in Facebook sooner rather than later.
We pick up a lot of feedback from parents that way. When we call off school, a lot of them find it out from Facebook first, and I think it just depends on your parent population and what they're using, but we've ran some ads on Facebook, and then we've ran some ads for our page as well. And the ads for our page were very effective. We kind of had this goal internally to be at 1,000 likes, and we were at 600 when we started. And we basically bought likes. I mean, you know, Facebook promoted our page for people in this area, and within a few weeks, we had 1,000 likes.
Well, I think that's one of the things that is attractive about Facebook for schools is that you can do such geographically targeted advertising, because there's no point in advertising your school to people who aren't within, 20 miles of your building, you know, because they're not going to become your customers, if you like. So that local targeting is really, really important. Right. It's part of the reason why we're interested in it, I suppose.
Well, and Facebook's ad platform to me is drastically easier to use than Google's. And, you know, and because Facebook has so much information, you know, we have an idea of like, most of our parents are probably going to be between you know, these ages and probably these zip codes. And Facebook allows us to say we want to target those people. And so from an advertising perspective, Facebook is a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, yep. And of course, I think one of the other things about Facebook is that the people who are of the age to have children in school right now are the Facebook generation. You know, the younger kids, you know, I can see in 10 years' time we'll be doing it on Instagram instead, probably, or something like that. Maybe 15 years' time, when the people who grew up with Instagram as their primary social network are then the parents. But for now, Facebook is where the 35-year-olds are at, I suppose.
And if you look at your ad money, it's a whole lot cheaper to do that than it is to put a big billboard up.
Yep.
So what are our topics for this week?
Okay, so yeah, let's dig in. I think this is, I think let's take stock for a second of where we are in the series. Okay, we've talked about vision and leadership. What else have we talked about? We've talked about, let me look at the list here. We've looked at things like teacher training, infrastructure analysis. We've looked at device selection. We've looked at buying accessories. Last week we talked about financing and rollout. And I think if you imagine, you know, if I imagine you're following along with this series, where you're getting to now is a point where you're making a decision about how you're going to buy. And the question now is, can we actually manage these things over the course of, you know, a 2, 3, 4 year life cycle? So, Bradley, I think this is really two shows in one. So we'll probably split this show eventually and serve this up as a double header over the next couple of weeks. But the topic is mobile device management and app deployment. Lots to talk about there.
Yeah, and I think this is, to me, one of those topics that has changed so much from even 2012.
Yes.
You know, the vision and leadership, you know, your vision for an iOS deployment in 2012 is in some ways largely the same as it is today, because it's about the classroom environment. But this has drastically changed because Apple has drastically moved the platform forward. We were iMessaging with friend of the show, Fraser Hess, talking about how these tools have really matured. Now, they're not at the level of a Mac, which you can maybe do with a Mac deployment, or a Windows laptop deployment with Active Directory. You know, maybe they're not as mature as that. But look at how long those tools took to get to where they are, and then what we've done with iOS. And maybe I don't even count 2010. Because that, you know, just was released, so we didn't even know what to do with it. Of course, Cedars was obviously on the front end, but even if you just look at 2011 until now, what Apple has built from a management platform, I mean, it's amazing. I never thought we would be able to do what we're doing with 7.1 specifically when, say, iOS 5 came out. I thought that'll never happen.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think. How can I put it? You know, in 2010, the management tool was iTunes, right? And there was this thing called iPhone Configuration Utility, and that tells you what it, you know, how kind of basic it was that it was called iPhone Configuration Utility at the time. And basically what that was an editor, a visual editor for configuration profiles that would let you install configuration profiles over the wire onto specific devices. And it did a fine job of that, and that was, we certainly used that in the first days, but in terms of app management and so on, and backup management, all of that was just through iTunes. And like we said in the last show, what we did then in terms of iOS administration in school was basically identical to what we do, or we were doing at home at the time. And today, and particularly Bradley, you're right to say with iOS 7.1, we're in a very, very different place now, where and I suppose fair warning to people who are listening, you know, this is not something that I think just anybody with no technical knowledge can pick up. I think you have to now be a pretty seriously competent, probably systems administrator, actually. Do you think that would be fair to say? I was going to say computer user, but I think it's probably beyond that now.
I think I think certainly someone that lives in the Active Directory world has, you know, let's say you're new to the, you're not really a Mac guy, but your company, you're a Windows shop, and your company wants to deploy iPads and iPhones in the field. I think those people that live in that world have the skills to figure it out. Obviously, if you are already familiar with the Mac platform, I think that some of that helps translate. But you've got to be able to have a 40,000-foot view to see how your changes impact your deployment. Like we mentioned on the last show about the Choose Your Own Adventure, there are decisions you make, and specifically with MDM and app development, that are very difficult to undo if you pick wrongly. And so you need to have the ability to set back and look at, you know, going back to that term vision, and envision what the end of your deployment looks like, and think about how these apps are getting to the user, where, how they're licensed, how they're assigned, and how does that scale when someone's in, you know, kindergarten versus 10th grade.
Yes. I think for me, the key thing is always that experienced systems administrators have a long-term view of the computer life cycle, let's put it that way, that you're going to start one day and you're going to have these devices for years and years and years, and you will have to put in effort to keep them going. And I think people who do opportunistic iOS deployments maybe don't have that experience. And I think, and it's not a criticism, because in some ways, I really feel that you can't get that experience until you've been burned by that experience, if you know what I mean. Like you have to have sort of run into these problems before you start to get the kind of paranoia that most systems administrators have about where does this data go, how does that get managed, how do we back up, what's the disaster recovery procedure, and so on and so on. So I think you're right that as long as people with genuine system deployment experience can unhook themselves from one particular model of the world, which is the Active Directory and Microsoft world, and realize that there are other perfectly valid ways to do the or to achieve the same goal, then as long as you have those kind of skills, I'm pretty sure people can come on board with it. But they do have to be aware that it will be different. It's not going to be exactly the same as you do it with Microsoft.
And I think the MDM and app deployment is where I would like to see Apple really beef up their training and certification for iOS deployments. I mean, they obviously have some of this stuff for the Mac, and I know they've revamped their certification program in the last year or so. And mm-hmm. I would love for them to come out with an iOS deployment certification, because if they go to school and they say, "Hey, we want you guys to buy stuff," and it's deployed wrongly, because the in-house IT staff or the in-house tech coordinator, the in-house advanced teacher did it wrongly, that leaves schools with a bad impression of Apple. And so if Apple says, look, before you buy this, these 50,000 iPads, it would be worth your staff coming and getting certified so we can walk them through the best practices for this. Because if, in reality, if Apple doesn't do it, somebody else will.
Yes, I suppose they will. And I think in some ways the MDM vendors are sort of filling in that gap a little bit. I know Casper, disclaimer, sponsor of the show, but Casper have a number of certifications where you can become a certified Casper administrator and various things like that. So that's one of the ways that you can start to get up to speed on some of this stuff is to use your vendor for that. But Bradley, I think we should back up a little bit because not necessarily everybody listening will understand exactly what we mean by an MDM server. So let's just go back to first principles and understand what we're talking about here. Does that suit you?
Yeah, let's take a quick sponsor break. We'll thank one of our sponsors for this week. The fine folks at Jamtext. Jamtext for iPhone uses the power of iOS 7 to access a library of millions of songs, and you can attach clips to text messages that you can send to any phone. With one tap, the person receiving your message can listen to the clip, or if they're on a phone that supports iTunes, they can jump right to the song within the iTunes store to download it. Jamtext works in over 120 countries from Anguilla to Zimbabwe to deliver a huge selection of legal music. Jamtext is simple, secure, and private. The app displays no ads and collects no personal information. It respects musicians and it respects the listeners. We like it, and we think you will like it too. Best of all, Jamtext is free for a limited time to celebrate the launch. So again, it's totally free. Even if you don't think you want it right now, go ahead and download it because you may want it in a few months. So you can find Jamtext, that's Jamtxt, on the App Store, or visit jamtext.com, and we will have a link in the show notes at outofschool.net. So thanks to the fine folks at Jamtext for sponsoring the show this week.
Yes, indeed. So let's go back to definitions. What is an MDM? It's confusing, right?
Well, I think that term, in a lot of ways, some people think that maybe do you consider Apple Configurator to be an MDM? You have to define exactly what is the mm-hmm. role of an MDM before you can really, hash out the definition.
Yeah. So mobile device management is two different things. Number one, it is a defined protocol. It's not an Apple-specific protocol. The term is generic. And the first real MDM systems, if you like, for mobile devices were BlackBerry management servers back in the day when companies were putting out 50,000 BlackBerries and had to control the information that was on them. And since the sort of modern smartphone revolution, both iOS and Android, but to a far greater extent iOS, I believe, have provided protocols built into the system that allow a remote server to both query the device for its status, and we'll talk about what kind of status you can get in a minute, and also send commands to the device from some kind of administrator dashboard. And the key thing about an MDM, when we say MDM, what we mean is a system like that that operates over the air, right? That's the key defining feature. It's some kind of server software that you will log into as an administrator that will send commands to devices that are enrolled with it, and you can do things like apply configuration profiles over the air, or you can gather inventory. And what kind of things do we get in MDM inventory? Well, serial numbers, IMEI numbers if they're cellular devices. You can also get a list of the apps that are installed on the device, how much free space is there, battery level, and so on. So that's the kind of thing you can do with an MDM server. And the rest of this show, I suppose, is us just discussing what are the consequences of being able to do that, and what are the features you might look for in an MDM server. But the MDM itself is a protocol, and Apple defines this. It's not a public document as far as I know, but there is a list of here are all the things you can both query an iOS device for, and also here are all the commands you can send to an iOS device. And that's how these remote servers can control iOS devices. You can't do everything. You certainly can't do everything. And it's not like Apple Remote Desktop. I don't know if you've ever come across that confusion, Bradley, but people think, well, if I get an MDM, does that mean I can look at the screen of every iPad? No, that's not a feature in iOS at the moment. Maybe a nice feature to have in the future, but it's not possible right now. But it will let you see certain things as defined in the MDM protocol query specification, such as those things that I've mentioned. So that's what we mean by an MDM system. Now, Bradley, who makes these things?
There are more and more coming on, you know, all the time. You can see, you know, within the IT industry, when you start seeing acquisitions of certain kinds of companies, you need to understand what's becoming big. And MDM is a hot thing right now. Obviously, Cisco bought Meraki last year, and they have a free MDM. Then you've got Jamp Software, one of our sponsors this week. They just got an additional $30 million in new funding. And then you've got AirWatch was just purchased, I believe, by VMware. And then Maz 360 is another. You know, their big thing is they're completely, you know, it's like a hosted-only solution. IBM bought them. And, of course, you've got some other ones. You've got Lightspeed. You've got Mobile Iron. And then, of course, you can also just use Apple Profile Manager and OS X Server. So, you know, there are many options you can choose. But I think you'll notice a lot of the smaller ones are starting to get kind of bought up here recently because it's a hot commodity. You know, if you're not going to get into the application, you know, design field, you're not going to make apps for the iOS devices. You can't make iOS devices because Apple owns them. So what are you going to do to get into that business? And I think specifically with VMware buying AirWatch, what is VMware's future? How long does their business last? Do they see their eroding over time? You know, certainly with the desktop software. I know that's probably a small amount of their business, but they had no play in mobile at that time.
Yeah. No. I mean, what is VMware's thing at the moment? It's cloud management of end user systems, right? Centralizing that somehow. And I think you're right, the shift to mobile takes that away from centralization. It's not really possible except by doing a little bit of MDM on the side. So yeah, the point is there are many options, right? And there's not one that's the best. And I think this is one of the trickier shows in the sense that we can't necessarily just come out and say there is one system and here's the one to buy, because all of these ones that you've mentioned, Bradley, they all have different things that you might consider to be advantageous depending on what you want to do with it, right? Again, and always the question, what do you want to do with it? So we'll dig into some of that stuff. I want to just do a kind of mea culpa for a minute, because I think you and I, Bradley, have been very cynical about Meraki over the past year, and I think we should probably apologize for that, because being a free MDM, we were sort of skeptical. Cynical is maybe wrong, but certainly skeptical of the idea that they would invest enough development effort to support the latest innovations that we knew were coming from Apple, such as this thing called managed distribution. And I think it's fair to say that Meraki have actually done a pretty good job of supporting those new things from Apple as they've come out. So I think at the moment, I don't think I would have many reservations about people using Meraki. I know there are some big deployments in various places that are using Meraki and using it very successfully. So I think it's important to note that, because I think we were probably a little too skeptical about that in the past.
Yeah, my only concern, and again, they got the DEP support in very quickly, and they continue to advance that platform. And my only concern is that since Cisco is such a huge company, that if you know, they paid a lot of money for Meraki, and if that doesn't work out, let's say 3 or 4 years from now, that's not going so well, and they say we're not going to compete in the, you know, I guess Meraki really competes in the mid market. I mean, most schools our size aren't looking at Cisco for wireless because it's much more expensive, and it's in some ways a lot of overkill. And so if Meraki is the mid market and they decide from a corporate perspective we're not going to focus on the mid market, and they kill the Meraki product line, and I'm not saying they're planning on doing that or have even discussed it, but you know, you can say, well, they paid $2 billion for them. Well, but they, you know, I've seen other big acquisitions shut down because it wasn't working out, and the cost of keeping it going is more than the cost of writing off what you paid. And I'm sure there would be a long kind of wind down, and I realize that. But and I say all this as I use the free Google apps for education. So I guess take that for a grain of salt. It is just, to me, it's easier to move an email system than it is to think about moving an MDM solution. And that's my only reservation. Again, they've developed it, and it seems to work very well. And especially if you're Meraki, you know, Wi-Fi or switching or firewall customer, it makes perfect sense. But again, but you're right. We were probably too hard on it.
Yeah, I think what I want to say about that is that the choice of your MDM provider is going to be more down to what exact features and capabilities the solution has, rather than anything to do with how much of the MDM protocol the product supports. Because the MDM protocols are essentially quite simple. You know, their queries and their commands. And it's sufficiently small that almost every vendor can support just about every command and every query. The question is, on the server side, on the MDM side, do they gather and present and organize that data and provide you with an administrator workflow that suits the way you want to deploy? We'll dig into some of those questions a little bit. But I think, to my mind, Bradley, those are the key questions. And I think maybe, you know, if Cisco ever did want to be rid of Meraki, probably what would happen is they would sell it off to somebody else. Because if there is a market for MDM providers, then I'm sure there would be some option to continue or transition to some other product there.
You know, MDM reminds me a lot of picking an email solution. You know, again, if you're using Gmail or you're using Office 365 or you're using Exchange Server or you're using Fastmail, you know, the email protocol is largely the same. Outside of, you know, some of the things that Google does, everybody kind of maybe has their own twist on a few things. But at the end of the day, you're still sending email to people. And MDM reminds me a lot of that, as it's, you know, at the core, a lot of the technology is shared. But it's kind of how you interact with that. It's kind of like, look at what our sponsor folks at Jamf Software done with Casper Focus. That's using the guided access API. So that's nothing that they like have to shoehorn into iOS to make it work. But it's the way they built that app for teachers to be able to do that, that is kind of their special sauce.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll mention some others in a little while where there are other things that maybe fit together. Depends on what you want to do. And also sometimes what you already have, whether or not you're going to choose one over the other.
Before we move on, let's thank our second sponsor of the night. It is the fine folks at Jamf Software. Mm-hmm. They provide ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they have placed these great technologies directly into the hands of teachers who work with students every day. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain student attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select specific Apple TVs assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. Learn what else you can do with Casper Focus at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com, or we will have a link to the show notes at outofschool.net.
Okay, good show for them to be sponsoring.
Yeah, it worked out. And that was completely accidental, in case anyone. And Chris, I think anyone that is a longtime listener of the show knows that, you know, when we talk about Jamf, it's kind of like with our friends at Arrowhive. We would say good things whether they sponsored or not. But we're thankful they sponsor.
Yes, we are. I mean, I'm just coming up to my first year's renewal for being a Casper customer. We pay a certain amount of money per year per device, and we're very happy to renew because, in fact, we were customers before they sponsored the show. So that was, and in a minute I'll tell you why we chose Jamf, because it was an interesting thought process. But before we get into that, let's talk just briefly about when you would need an MDM and why you would need an MDM. So I think, I don't think it's quite correct just yet to say that in any possible circumstance you must have an MDM, otherwise you can't do this job. There are some limited circumstances where it would still be correct for you to use, say, Apple Configurator or even iTunes to achieve your deployment scenarios. But if you are deploying devices to individuals, or, for example, you want to apply some control to a bring-your-own-device scenario, then you're going to want an MDM solution in place. Is that fair to say, Brad?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think with each, I think as time goes on, the reasons to use an MDM, those reasons, you know, grow. And I think the reasons to not get smaller. And I don't think it'll ever be in 100% of situations that you're deploying iOS in any sort of circumstance that you have to have an MDM. But I think you may get to where there are like four exceptions, you know, four types of small, you know, edge case deployments. Especially if Apple keeps enhancing what MDM vendors can do, and then it's not necessarily like being forced to do it, but you want to do it. Again, imagine if they did add screen sharing. Well, that would be huge for anyone that does any kind of remote support, because there's nothing worse that, let's say you are an engineering company, you have engineers in the field, and they're having an issue with an iPad. How much easier would it be for you just to remote in? And so that, you know, things like that would make it worth its weight in gold.
Yes, I agree with you. I think there will be in the future still times where you don't use an MDM, but it will be things like we're using iPads as standalone museum guides that we check out from the front desk or something like that. You know, I don't think in short order, if not already today, if you're deploying iPads to be used as personal iPads in any situation, I really think that MDM is, if not already, then very soon going to be essentially a fundamental requirement of getting it right over the long term. Now, again, I want to emphasize that you can probably think of ways to get your deployment done in the short term without an MDM. But again, what I want you to think about is, I want you to think about the system administrator hat on. What's it going to be like next year? How do we do this in the middle of the year? You can design a deployment day where we plug them all into Apple Configurator and then we go. But what happens when you need a new app on those devices? Do you have to bring them all back to the classroom? Or can you just do something over the air? And wouldn't it be much better to do something over the air? There we go.
Yeah.
So, broad brush, why do you need an MDM? Okay, we've said when you might want to use it, when you're putting out personal devices, or you're having people bring devices and you want to apply some kind of policy control to those devices. Well, a good MDM solution, to my mind, what it does is it gives you insight into your deployment. So in my MDM, I can see the percentage used in terms of storage space on all the devices in my school from one web page. I don't have to touch any device to find out that information. I can look at the battery life. I can actually see the IP address they last checked into the server from. I can look at the list of apps that are installed in each device. I can get a list of all the apps that are installed in all the devices and how many different versions there are. I can see who's upgraded to iOS 7.1 and who hasn't. I can find out how many people are still on iOS 7.04 and need to do the security update, and so on and so on. So I think that's one of my favorite things about using MDM, is that I can get insight into those things without having to actually go and inspect any device.
This reminds me of one of the conversations that led to the start of this podcast, was like why something like Aerohive over Apple routers, which again, Apple's routers are extremely fast and they work very well. And it comes down to at the end of the day, it's the insight and being able to understand what's going on and have a high level view of how your Wi-Fi network is impacting your environment and what's going on and what's your traffic trends. And obviously the APs are much more advanced and can do some different things like band steering and, you know, modifying the radio rates and things like that. And that's all great. But at the end of the day, to me, what makes something like Aerohive great is the looking at the dashboards and seeing my traffic trends and seeing if an AP is overloaded and at what times it's overloaded, and so I can readjust maybe my coverage.
Yeah. So to me, that's the key reason for MDM. There are also some sort of low-level tactical things that you might want as well. So, for example, a good MDM server can monitor for certain conditions and alert you either by email or some notification through an app or something. And situations you might want that to be used in are things like, I'm trying to think of an example I have. If anybody goes over the 75% full threshold on their iPad, I might want an email about that because I know they're probably going to run out of space quite soon. Or if somebody installs a certain app with a certain name that I don't want on any school device, and maybe I can't block it because it's rated below our age limits. The classic example is Snapchat right now. I don't want Snapchat on any iPad in the school. So I have a little saved search in Casper that says, if any app's name contains Snapchat, then send me an email. And I find out if anybody installs Snapchat and their device checks in with the server, I can get alerted about that and I can go and have a conversation about it. So monitoring and alerting is a very important feature of an MDM. And finally, one of the main reasons you're going to want this is because we're going to talk about app distribution in the next show. MDM is the only interface to this new Apple technology called Managed Distribution for the Volume Purchase Program. And you are going to want to use Managed Distribution if you're trying to do this at any kind of scale. Therefore, you're going to want an MDM. Therefore, that's why you're listening to this show. Seem fair?
Seems fair.
Okay. Oh, there's one other thing I forgot to mention. The other thing about MDM is it allows you to send configuration profiles over the air to devices. Now, in many cases, you'll design a base configuration profile that everybody gets when you activate the device, but you may want to have the ability to send out additional configuration profiles based on something that happens. Here's a good example. One pupil in the school is being a pest with the camera on their iPad. You said at the start of the year, if you cause me a problem with the camera, we're going to turn it off. So if you don't have an MDM, then yeah, you can do that, but you've got to get the iPad back, plug it into configurator, put another profile on. Whereas with an MDM server, I can just say, put that guy's iPad into the group that doesn't get the camera. And then over the air, the MDM server just pushes out a new profile, it just turns off the camera, and suddenly their camera just disappears. The nice thing about that is you can do that from your phone or from your iPad. You don't have to get it back to a computer or plug it in, cables, all that stuff. You can just make it happen straight away.
And these are not removable, correct? On the end user device.
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation. And if you remember the LA hack that we've referred to a couple of times, one of the big mistakes that was made there, as far as we can tell, was that they relied on their MDM to provide all the security profiles that they wanted. And they wanted a lot of security profiles. They wanted to lock everything down so that you could only do the curriculum content. And the problem with MDM, as it currently stands, in iOS 7.1, not using the device enrollment program yet, we'll talk about that in a second, but currently if you just enroll your devices directly in your MDM, the problem is that the user can always unenroll their device from MDM. And what happens then is the MDM profile is like a master profile, and every other profile that was delivered from your MDM server is also removed along with it. So, for example, if in that scenario I just told you about, if the user unenrolls their device from MDM, that camera restriction profile will also come off their device as well. So there is something to be said for the security of putting profiles on through Apple Configurator. But if you have access to the device enrollment program, you can actually work around this. And this is the new thing that Apple's done at the moment only for US schools, but it's going to be really useful, where they've actually integrated your MDM provider, your MDM server, with Apple's own activation server. So when a device in its virgin state straight out of the box attempts to activate with Apple's servers, then if that device is in the device enrollment program, i.e. Apple knows you own that serial number and you've registered with Apple's device enrollment program, Apple will activate the device and then they will divert it to your MDM server for enrollment. Now, obviously, the device has to be up on the network for that to happen. So what happens then is your MDM will enroll the device, put a profile on the device before the setup system's even finished, and the device will then be enrolled in your MDM. And by virtue of this whole thing being a closed system, where the device activates, The activation server sends it to the NDM, and the NDM comes back to the device before the user's had any chance to do anything. One of the things you can do then is you can actually lock the MDM profile in place. And that solves all of this. It sort of closes the circle in terms of this problem of taking away the MDM profile, therefore taking away the security profiles. So as long as you're using device enrollment, which is on the US schools for now, you can securely put all your restrictions in place through MDM. Whereas for me, because I'm not in the US, I have to put on my core security restriction profiles through a configuration profile delivered through Apple Configurator. I do that first, then I enroll in my MDM, and then I put out those additional security protocols on top. Now, those are the ones that are, I deliberately design it in such a way that the ones that go out over MDM go out kind of for my convenience, but the core security ones, such as the age limit restriction in the App Store, that goes into the base profile through Apple Configurator, and that is absolutely not removable, with it absent a password that only I know. Traditionally a little tricky, this bit.
Well, and especially because it's a, when it's a country-by-country feature, or
yes,
or there's U.S. and everyone else. And so, realistically, no one's probably doing a deployment today for in schools, realistically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm assuming when we're planning for the fall. So hopefully over the summer, this will be available to a lot more people.
Yes. I think at the end of the day, this is the right way to do it, right? It's kind of a piece with, you know, the activation lock, where Apple's using their requirement for activation with Apple servers to enable enhanced security, essentially. And this is a nice option for schools that own the device. Now, what I've said to you is not possible if you're doing bring your own device, because you don't own the device itself. But if you have a managed deployment, a school-owned deployment, you can actually start to use your MDM as of now, I guess. You can start to use your MDM as a secure channel for all security profiles, which is a nice enhancement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to think, did you get Apple Configurator at the same time the US did?
Yes, that did come out at the same time. Yeah, it came out with the iPad 2, was it?
Yeah, iPad 2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we had it, but the problem was we couldn't do anything with it because we didn't have the volume purchase program at the same time. So we had Apple Configurator, and we could use it to activate devices in bulk, and we could use it to set configuration profiles, but we couldn't use it for app deployment. So in effect, we basically didn't use it for the first year, or first 2 years, actually. But now we use that for our younger pupils. We do all their iPad management through Configurator. And for the older pupils, we've touched them with Configurator once to activate them, but then after that, the pupils deal with it themselves.
Before we move on, let's thank our last sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy for you to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Now, for a free trial, and it's a no credit card required trial, and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code PUPIL. Again, that's no credit card required. So you can just go there, sign up, and start making a site. When you check out and pay, we know you will, and use the offer code PUPIL, you get 10% off. Now, Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. They have beautiful designs for you to start with and all the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. Squarespace has over 20 highly customizable templates for you to choose from. They have won numerous design awards from prestigious institutions like the Webby's, Forbes, and the FWA. And again, it's incredibly easy to use. I mentioned I'm rebuilding our school's website in there. I built it about 4 hours and moved everything over with a fresh new design, and it was completely tweaked to match our color scheme. Very easy. But if you do need help, they have an incredible support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That over 70 employees are on their customer care team, which is based in New York City. And their office has actually been nicknamed the Care Bear Lair. I literally one day sent a support email at 6 o'clock. I had a response, I think, in like 5 minutes. And I thought it was like the message they were sending me to let me know they got my response. But no, it was an actual response from a live person. Now, Squarespace has introduced Squarespace logo. So in addition to building your website, you can now build your own logo for your site, your business card, shirt, or whatever you want. And you can do that at squarespace.com/logo. And we'll have a link in the show notes to the blog post about that. Now, it starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So if you sign up for a year, you actually get a little bit of a break on the price as well. Every design is automatically responsive. It's not like where every mobile site looks the same. Your site will scale down to whatever device you're working on, and it'll be responsive but matches your theme. So again, when you go to sign up, use the offer code PUPIL, and you'll get 10% off, and that lets Squarespace know you came from our show. So we want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring the show this week. Squarespace, everything you need to make an amazing website.
Yes, indeed. I had cause to use their support options this week because I had, in my genius transition to Squarespace 6, I had managed to set the... I didn't know this at the time, but I had managed to set the back and forward links in my blog archive to white on white. And I was furiously roaming about going, where's the button to turn on the archive links? And I actually used their live chat service to get an answer there, which was really great. Took 3 or 4 minutes to connect to somebody, and then within 10 seconds I had the answer.
You almost want to tell them, like, you don't have to respond so fast. Like, well, one of the things they do that I think it's neat, you know, when you're dealing with, like, support people, you kind of see them as, like, a faceless person. And mm-hmm. it's like if you're mad at them, it's like easier to be mad because you don't know them. And like a lot of those support people have like a link to like an about them page on Squarespace. And like you see a picture of them, you learn about their hobbies and where they're from. And like I think that's really neat because then that lets you understand like they're a real person that's answering this question. And like they probably go home at normal times and have a life outside of here. And I don't know. I just like getting to know people at the companies I do business with like on a personal basis.
Yeah, especially if you're going to have a long-term commitment. And I suppose that's one of the things that kind of feeds back into the show that we're talking about, Bradley, is one of the things to consider about your MDM vendor is what kind of relationship can you develop with the people who work there? Is it just you're one of many people whose accounts are being managed, or do you actually have, you know, a meaningful working relationship with one or two people at that company?
Well, yeah, and I really like, I know Arrowhive has one, and I know Jamf does as well. They've got like mm-hmm. a community portal where you can just go and like post stuff and talk to people. And it's not necessarily for support, but just to submit feature requests. And like, it's like when you have a question, it's not really a trouble ticket, but like you're just wondering how this could work with this. And you can go and just talk to people. And, you know, Arrowhive employees hang out on theirs, Jamf employees hang out on theirs. And, you know, I've gotten mm-hmm. to know my Arrowhive local team like really well. I mean, you know, I'll text them on the weekends and ask them how they're doing. I mean, we're friends. And, you know, I know it's harder to do that as companies get bigger. But, you know, if you've got a local kind of a local team for whatever company you're using, or go hang out on the support forums and just get to know people.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that Jamf have, which I've never been to, but they have this thing called the Jamf Nation User Conference, which is a free conference. You know, how often are conferences free these days? But they have this free conference in Minnesota every year where all the Jamf users can get together and basically share and learn from each other. And there's actually, we should probably throw the link to this in the show notes, but I was watching some of it on the train coming back from a thing last week. And they have some really, really great content there, both from Jamf employees, but also just from, you know, prominent users of the Casper suite in large installations and specialized installations and so on. So it's really nice to have that sort of community sense with one of the companies you can deal with. And I suppose that's one thing that I feel kind of glad that Jamf in particular have been able to secure enough funding that they don't have to be an acquisition target, because it would be a shame to lose that, I think.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, it's funny, I'm no love lost for RenWeb on this show. They're a fine company and they're good people, but their user conference is in Atlanta this year. And so it's a 2-hour drive. And I'm much more willing to submit requests for training when I can drive instead of fly. You just get mm-hmm. to a point when you have to fly for training, it's very, you know, that just adds a whole another degree of cost. Yeah. And so I asked my boss, I said, hey, you know, do you want me to go? And he's like, oh, that sounds great. And yeah, the conference is $325. And that's not, I know that's not a lot, but July is like the last month in our fiscal year. And so things get tight in July. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's that.
That's when you're stealing pens from home and bringing them to work.
Yeah, it's like this broke, but I can just use an external mouse. My trackpad's broke, but I'll just use an external mouse until August.
Yeah, I may or may not be actually carrying my own stash of whiteboard markers at this point in the year. Yeah. But I have the nicest whiteboard markers in the school.
I won't tell your wife.
£6 from Amazon. There you go. Right, so we talked about what you might do with an MDM for deployment. Device enrollment in the US and presumably later to the rest of the world is very important. And again, I think what you're seeing with both device enrollment, and we'll talk about in a later show, managed distribution for volume purchase, is that the MDM is becoming, it's becoming the control center of your iOS deployment. It's moving away from configurator on a device or iTunes on a computer to, in the cloud, your MDM server is the only interface to managed distribution and device enrollment. These two major new programs from Apple can only be accessed and managed if you have an MDM solution in place. So get on board with this, I think is what I'm saying, even if you're not necessarily going to do it in the first day. Well, if you are going to do a new deployment, yes, do it on the first day, but if you don't have it already, make a plan for getting it if you do already have a deployment.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so some suggestions, right? Some examples of how you might use MDM for policy enforcement. I've already talked about using MDM to, for example, push configuration profiles to specific users for specific purposes. Obviously, you can now do the same thing with apps. Casper has for some time had a mechanism by which you can deploy ebooks to enrolled devices. There's a thing that goes on the device called self-service, and it's just a web portal that the kids can click on, and you can put into certain devices ebooks that you may have prepared for them and so on, as an alternative to, for example, putting them in iTunes U. So if you don't use iTunes U, you could put it out through your MDM server. But I suppose the key thing in terms of managing it and deployment at scale is that whatever MDM you choose, you want to think about how are you going to group users together or devices together so that you can manage them en masse, right? Because when you use something like Apple Configurator or in previous times iTunes, you're essentially managing devices one by one and trying to sort of manually keep them all roughly together. So you've got a class group and you want them all to have a certain app. Doing that through iTunes, you can imagine how kind of tedious that could be. A good MDM will allow you to group things at multiple different levels and in multiple different ways and apply both configuration profile policies and also apps to specific groups for specific purposes. And that's something to look for in a good MDM. So the way I deal with this at the moment is I have smart groups. Every device has one user for us because it's a one-to-one program. And what I do is I have static groups. You can create in Casper, you can create static groups and smart groups, which are based on queries. But for static groups, I have individual classes because obviously they don't change much from year to year apart from people leaving or coming to the school. And then I have a whole lot of smart groups for different conditions. So, for example, I've got a smart group of people who are not on the latest version of iOS. I've got a smart group for all the devices where the storage used is between 50 and 75% and 75% and above and so on. I've mentioned that before in the show. I also have smart groups for things like all the devices that have Snapchat installed, all the devices that have Instagram installed, all the devices that have any app whose name includes the word gun, for example. And that was something that we kind of came up against in the very early days of giving kids free access to the App Store under a certain age limit, was that a lot of kids loaded up a lot of games. And some of those games were not super appropriate for school. So what we did was I was looking at, you know, just sort of browsing the app inventory, and I was, you know, what's that app all about? What's that app all about? And we started to see that there were some mostly shooting games that we didn't want kids to have in school. So I created a new smart group for any app whose name contains a gun and some various other terms. And then whenever any of those apps get installed, I get an email notification saying this device installed this app called Pixel Gun 3D or whatever. And then I can go and have a conversation with that person, say, you know, what were you thinking about? How did you feel that was appropriate for school? Does that match up with our acceptable use policy? And again, it's not always about blocking, but it's about monitoring and awareness and then having a conversation and a bit of a learning about it afterwards. And that's how we run some things like that. So those are some examples of how you might use an MDM tool in actual production. That's mostly what I do with it. I have the capability to push out additional profiles. I haven't really done that very often. Done it a couple of times, but not very often. but that is good to have that capability there too.
You know, is it a fair thing to say that you deploy MDM for your benefit and not necessarily your end users? It's to simplify your life.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. More and more it will come to benefit your users as well. But at the moment, the main benefit that we, our users get from us having an MDM is that our senior kids can go into the self-service portal and they can get apps that we've paid for. That's how they get them in Casper, is they go into self-service, they click the install button there, and the server pushes them a redemption code because we're not using managed distribution yet. We'll talk about that in the next show. But I get a lot of benefit out of it at the moment, and it saves me a lot of time. And what will happen is over time, users will get more benefit because then they won't even have to install things. It'll just appear on their device because I've pushed them out at some point in the previous few hours. So, last question, I think, for this show, Bradley, is how do you choose a good MDM?
You know, I think it's important to remember that, you know, going back to Meraki, even the free one is supporting the device enrollment program rather quickly. And so MDM is something, these protocols in iOS 7 are something that Apple builds. You know, obviously, like if this is an Android deployment, you know, it's possible different MDM vendors can do different things because they can install their own custom, you know, things that run in the background and do certain things. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, ultimately, like cars are kind of the same. You know, there's an engine, there's brakes, there's a transmission. And it's like it's the details that drive you to one or the other. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And it's also, you know, what's the first question you ask about cars? Well, what do you want to do with your car? Do you want to drive off road? Do you want to haul a caravan? Do you want to wade through a stream, or do you want to just have good fuel efficiency? Right. And you ask the same question of your MDM. What is it I'm trying to achieve? And how did each of these options best fit the thing I'm trying to achieve? So here are some examples, right? If you are planning to use Casper Suite, for example, the way that Jamf came to being an iOS MDM vendor was that Casper Suite used to be a Mac management tool, and then they added iOS onto the side of it. So the key strength for Casper is if you have an all Apple deployment, it's a great tool because you can manage both your Macs and your iOS devices from one dashboard. That's one of the main arguments for using Casper. Is you get Macs and iOS, you want to manage the whole suite. Whereas if you know you're going to have a mixed deployment, you might want to look at another solution which gives you something else. You know, a solution that maybe provides iOS, Android, and Windows Phone management, let's say, if you're going to put a couple of Windows Phone. Or another one is Lightspeed, we've mentioned already, where Lightspeed have the capability to both integrate with NDM, a web filtering product, and also a VLE, a virtual learning environment. So they have this thing called My Big Campus, they have Lightspeed web filtering, and they have Lightspeed NDM. And you can actually manage all of those things through a similar interface as well. So again, it just depends on what are your criteria, and does this option meet the solution you're looking for. And I suppose, Bradley, as with cars as well, a question you're going to ask is, well, how much does this cost? Because you've mentioned Meraki is free. That's great. There are costs associated with other ones, some higher than others. And I think when I first started looking at MDM a couple of years ago, a lot of these companies who were doing MDM at the time had come from the corporate BlackBerry world, where they wanted, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for a server and $35 to $40 per device per year, which is just insane money for a school. You know, there's no way we're paying that. It's cheaper for me to do all this effort. But today, what you're seeing is much lower cost, particularly for schools, but still not zero. So you've got to think about, well, what's your budget? How much is that worth? And so on and so on.
And then if you're buying directly from Apple here in the States, they are a reseller of the Casper Suite, and so you can actually bundle that into your lease if you're in lease from Apple. Important to remember that, you know, you would need to go ahead, you know, don't try to like just lease Casper for 1 year on a 3-year lease. You know, you want to go ahead and lease for the full 3 years. You know, go ahead and buy 3 years of, you know, licensing from Jamf first.
Yeah, most definitely. That's probably whatever company you go with, unless it's Meraki when you're free, you're probably going to be looking at some kind of year-on-year licensing cost for MDM. And the question is that affordable or not? And trade that off against how much time will people spend managing it if you don't? Because although I don't spend zero time managing our iOS deployment through our MDM, I do spend substantially less than I would if I had to bring them all back to base. And of course, being able to do over the air means that it's much less disruptive. Like, I don't have to take our devices out of any class in secondary just to check them all out, because I can look at so much of this stuff remotely. I can look at the apps, I can look at the status of the device and so on. So budget for all the costs associated with not doing it, as well as the costs associated with doing it, and then trade off both of those. And also, please count how much your staff time is worth, because way too many schools just put a zero value on that. And it's absolutely not zero. In fact, it's the most expensive cost in your school. And if you can save staff time, that's worth a lot of money. It really is.
I agree. It's our biggest expense. Is HR. 85% of our expenses are HR related.
And particularly if you think about the expense of the time of somebody who is capable of running this kind of deployment for your school. You know, they're probably not being paid the same as a janitor. It may be fair to say. I am being paid the same as a janitor, but this is the way it works here. sometimes I do the janitor's job as well. So I guess that kind of about wraps up with MDM. I mean, let's summarize what we've said. Number one, get on board with MDM. Number two, there's a lot of choices. Number three, you got to think about what you want to do. What systems do you want to manage? What kind of things do you want to manage? Do you need any integration with any other systems, such as your Wi-Fi or a web filtering product or something like that? And then finally, think about whether the MDM you're looking at provides all the things that you want. And do they have a good track record of supporting new developments in the field? Because one of the things that's for certain about this whole area of device management is that it's very fast moving and it's going to change again at some point in the future for sure. Is there anything else to add to that, Bradley?
No, I think that sums it up. And, you know, most of the companies I've looked at have, you know, obviously webinars you can do and see if they can set you up with, you know, kind of a hosted trial if it's on a hosted system to get in and kind of tinker around with it. Just see how it works. And so you can kind of get your, even if you just sign up for Meraki just to tinker around, that you can start to understand what you don't like about Meraki's interface and then go look for someone that supports something you like, you know, interface-wise.
Okay, Bradley, so why don't we leave it there? We're going to just run on, and in this same recording session, we're going to do another show just about app deployment and managed distribution. So we'll keep talking, but we'll split it here and we'll talk to everybody next week. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay. See you next week, everybody.